We are in week three of our series, Foundations, looking a little bit of the foundation, what makes up our DNA as the Salvation Army. We've looked at our history. Last week we looked at our faith. And today we focus on our vision and mission as the Salvation Army in Australia. Now, I was going to quiz you all about the vision statement of the Salvation Army in Australia, but of course that was before I remembered that we had a video playing and you already know what it is, right? Okay, very confident. The vision of the Salvation Army in Australia is wherever there is hardship or injustice, salvos will live, love and fight alongside others to transform Australia one life at a time with the love of Jesus. It's a bold vision, it's a big vision. And some of you may recall that this vision and our mission that we'll talk about in a moment was established when we came together as one territory. And we had the opportunity to reimagine what the Salvation Army in Australia could look like and what we wanted it to be, which I think is a little funny because really, to me, this just puts new words to an old statement or an old vision of who we were always called to be. People that cared about the saving of souls, yes, but actually about the entire person. And if you have been here over the last couple of weeks when we have looked at our history, David talked about that a couple of weeks ago, Jonathan unpacked what our faith was all about. Actually, it is about all of these things, about holistic mission, holistic vision for people. Our mission as the Salvation Army in Australia that helps us get to this vision says, and I hope that you have walked past our banners multiple times out there, depends how many times you go to the loo on a Sunday morning as to how embedded it is in your brain. But the Salvation Army is a Christian movement dedicated to sharing the love of Jesus, and we share the love of Jesus by caring for people, creating faith pathways, building healthy communities, and working for justice. These four pillars make up our mission. They help us to get to where we want to go. The vision is what we want to look like, who we want to be, and the mission should help us to live that out. Now, when these statements were created, obviously they did a lot of research, probably a lot of talking, but someone has actually written a paper about the theology behind our mission and why it's so important for us as the Salvation Army. And this week I read this quote that talks about this concept of holistic mission, mission being about the whole person. And it says, holistic mission is an integrated approach to mission in which all dimensions of life are valued. It includes the proclamation of word as well as the need for social action. It encompasses the present and the future, the individual and the community, the personal and the social, the spiritual and the physical, and all creation. In other words, everything. There's lots of words there to articulate that actually salvation, the kingdom of God, it is about every part of people's lives. We don't compartmentalize parts of our faith or our salvation. It's about all people. It's about the wholeness of all people. And you know, over the past 2 weeks, I hope that you have seen that. And I hope that makes you feel excited to be part of our faith community as the Salvation Army. And I truly hope that you feel like here at Parramatta Salvos, you are part of a church that is engaged in all four areas of our mission. And certainly our core leadership team uses this mission and the four pillars that make it up as a bit of a measure of where we're at and what we're doing, where we should be going next. Some of our programs encompass all four of the parts of our mission, some only a couple, but that's okay because we cover a wide range and variety of things. But you know, these two statements, they're big, they're overarching, they're for us to look at collectively as a movement. But I think the foundation of why we have them is because they actually help us to keep moving forward, to not get stuck. Because there's a temptation in our church community that we come and we see that we are doing all these things and some things are going well, or we feel comfortable in the way that we worship or we reach out to the community, and we stay stuck there. That's why each year our leadership team is encouraged by the territory to come up with new goals that align with our mission. The vision is so broad, but actually we get to localize it here as we deliver mission, and it helps us not to remain stagnant, but to keep moving forward. In the video that we watched before, it said every Salvationist is called to a life of purpose. Everyone is called to a life of purpose, and we believe that to be true. So I hope today these bigger picture mission and vision statements mean something to you. I hope you find yourself aligned with the things that we believe. Surely the deep salvo inside of you says, yes, we care about the whole person and we want to see people flourishing. But this morning, I want us to think more deeply about our own personal vision, our own personal purpose in life, to question where we're headed, what we're focused on, where Jesus is calling us. Because I don't know about you, but having vision in my life, it helps me to want to be better. As a church, I think it helps us to want to be better when we can see where we're going. Vision helps me to lift my eyes and to move forward. And I want us to do that today, personally. I'm going to do that through the lens of this scripture that Ian read to us from Matthew 14, 22 to 23, to 33. And you know, the focus on this story, I'm sure it's familiar to many of you, is usually on Peter. And we either say, good job, Peter, you stepped out of the boat, you followed Jesus' call. Or then on the flip side of that, we say, bad job, Peter, why did you sink? Why didn't you keep your eyes focused on Jesus? Why did you doubt? But I love this story because it reminds me, as I look to what's next in my life, in the life of our church, it reminds me of who Jesus is in these moments, much more than it reminds me of what Peter has done. He walked on water. That's crazy, right? Sometimes we've become a little desensitized to this story. Perhaps we don't even truly believe that it's real, but it's how Jesus responds that's important. So I just want to look at three things today that Jesus does, three things that he reveals about himself in this situation that hopefully will empower each one of us to take the next step towards achieving our personal vision or walking towards that. So the first thing that I think Jesus does from the very beginning in this story is that Jesus compels. Jesus compels. I don't know if you know this, but in Matthew, where this story is situated, it's right after Jesus has just fed the 5,000. They've witnessed him doing this incredible miracle. And instead of sitting around and basking in his own glory, you know, patting himself on the back, Jesus sends the disciples ahead on the boat, dismisses the crowd, and retreats to pray. He's moved on to the next thing. In verse 22, it says, immediately Jesus made the disciples get into the boat and go ahead of him to the other side while he dismissed the crowd. Jesus made the disciples leave and get into the boat. A better translation would probably be that he compelled them. He urged them to go and get into the boat and start out at sea. And you have to ask yourself, well, why? Why did he make them do that? And I wondered for the first time as I read this story again this week, what must have been running through those disciples' heads? You know when something good happens in your life and you just want to take a moment to sit there and to celebrate it? And as they begin sailing out into the middle of the night, the wind picks up, the boat is being smashed around. Now, I don't know about you, but if I'm a disciple in this situation, I'm thinking to myself, once again, what is the deal with this Jesus guy? Why would he send us out into a storm in the middle of the night, doesn't even bother to show up and to protect us? And I don't know if you've ever been in a similar situation to that. Jesus compels you to do something and you're obedient. And then you think to yourself, am I a little crazy? Did I mishear you, Jesus? Or maybe you're plodding along, just being consistent in the small stuff, being faithful with your life, and you think to yourself, how does my life look like this in the present moment when all I did was step out in obedience? You can imagine being a disciple, I think. I can imagine being a disciple there with the crowds, absolutely in awe of who Jesus is. He takes a couple of loaves, a couple of fishes, feeds 5,000 people. This is a miracle that's worth celebrating. But the thing is, if Jesus hadn't wrapped up, if he hadn't sent them on their way, if he hadn't gone to pray, moved them out into the ocean, then actually they would have missed out on what was next. They would have missed out witnessing Jesus walk on water. And I think sometimes we fall into that trap really easily, living our comfortable Christian lives. We might celebrate when God does something amazing, but for some of us, sometimes we want to just sit in that. We can be tempted to stay there instead of moving towards something better. And I was thinking this week about the comparison of scuba diving and snorkeling. Both have similar aims, right? Get to see cool stuff in the ocean. But you know, there's a whole lot of stuff that you just can't see if you're floating on the surface. Now, don't get me wrong, I've done a fair bit of snorkeling. Anyone else done some snorkeling? Yep. I've never scuba dived though. Has anyone scuba dived? Yeah, a few of you around the room. I've seen some pretty great stuff floating on the surface. But there is so much more depth to the ocean than what I can see when I'm floating on top of it. And I don't know about you, but when I think about this story and Peter and Jesus walking on water, I don't want to be back at a party on the land, wrapped up in that celebration and miss out on seeing Jesus walk on the water. Celebrating is obviously good, and we love to do that. And each new thing Jesus does in our lives is good. But we don't want to get trapped there because I believe that there is always more for him to do. What was there for the disciples, what had happened was a miracle. It was good. But it wasn't all that God had in store for them. And that's why we keep going back to our mission, to our vision, because we want what's best, not just for our lives individually, but what's best for the life of our church. But you know, moving forward with mission, focusing on vision, that's actually a harder way to live. Just the same as if we transition from snorkeling to scuba diving. See, you don't have to do very much prep to go snorkeling. You put a mask on, maybe some flippers. As long as you know how to swim, you're relatively okay. But if you want to go scuba diving, you can't just chuck on the gear. You have to take a course, usually. You have to learn how to breathe with the oxygen tank on. You have to know how to use the equipment or what happens if something goes wrong. You have to have enough oxygen to get down and back up. You usually have to take a buddy with you. And not only is it harder work, but actually scuba diving comes with increased risk. It's never risk-free. And I think if we want to go deeper, if we want to go to the next step where Jesus is calling us, we have to accept our inability to eliminate all risk. We can minimize risk, we can manage it, but it's always there. Scuba diving is harder work, takes more planning, more energy, more time, but actually it gets us to a deeper place, enables us to see much more, things that we can't see when we're floating on the surface. So the story moves on and the disciples are out in the ocean. The wind's kicked up, the waves are getting bigger. The disciples seem to be there for a considerable amount of time before Jesus joins them. And they're far away from the shore. So when they see this person walking towards them, they think that he's a ghost. They cry out. But as he approaches, he tells them to take courage, that it is him, that they don't have to be afraid anymore. And obviously in this moment, maybe Peter's quicker than the other disciples because he realizes that it's Jesus and he wants to get to him. In verse 28, he says, "Lord, if it's you, tell me to come to you on the water." And Jesus' response is our second point this morning, that Jesus calls us. He calls us to come and to be with him. When Peter speaks this desire that he sees Jesus, he wants to go to him, Jesus simply responds in verse 29 by saying, come, come. Simple, one word, come. There's no doubt in my mind that Jesus is still calling people today. The thing is, I think he is not always standing in the places we like. And the more of life I live, the less I like the places that Jesus seems to be standing, calling me to come. It doesn't make sense in this story that a human man is standing on water. It just doesn't. But here he is, and he calls Peter to himself. And I reckon that Peter probably knew how ridiculous it sounded when Jesus said, come. Peter would have known that humans can't walk on water. But he desired to be with Jesus. And so despite what makes sense in that moment, Peter steps out. Did he know for sure what was going to happen? Probably not. Did he make it all the way? No, he didn't. But he desired to be with Jesus and he responded to Jesus' call. And you know, for Peter that night, responding to Jesus' call to come to him was stepping out of the boat and onto the water. But for some of us, I think Jesus wants to meet us in a new place, to step out towards him in a different way. Maybe stepping out of the metaphorical boat for you might be in your conversations tomorrow. When someone asks you what you did on the weekend, perhaps instead of giving them a vague answer, you might have the courage to talk to them about church. Maybe Jesus is calling you to sit with the person who always seems to be alone, to invite them out for a cup of coffee. Maybe he's calling you to work really hard at your job because we need Christians in positions of influence in the secular world just as much as we need people in full-time ministry. I don't know where Jesus is standing, beckoning you to come. But I do know that if we desire to be with him, if we're in good relationship with him, that he calls us out and he says, come. And you know, the funny thing is, these 11 disciples, they might have thought in the moment that Peter was crazy, right? They might have thought that they were safer than Peter was in that moment. But how many of them walked on water? None. And I don't know about you, but I would way rather be Peter in that situation. So I want you to consider, in what areas of your life is Jesus over there calling you to come? Maybe you're already super aware of the things that he's calling you to do, and I'd encourage you to keep stepping towards that. Maybe you're seeing a new vision for the first time this morning of what he wants you to do, and again, step towards that. Maybe for some of you, you think, well, I've already done that. Many times I've stepped out of the boat and been obedient and God has been faithful. Well, I'll encourage you to do it again because he's not done with calling us out. So Peter steps onto the water, walks towards Jesus, and verse 30 tells us, but when he saw the wind, he was afraid and he began to sink and cried out, Lord, save me. We always seem to put Peter down in this part, right? He took his eyes off Jesus, his faith wavered, he got spooked by the wind and the big waves. But really, how many of us, when the waves of life seem to hit, can say that we were always focused on Jesus, that we were never shaken, that we never doubted? I just don't think that's true. All of us have times when we doubt, when we get scared, when we lose our nerve a little bit. Some of us don't even get out of the boat because of the fear of the wind and the waves. But I think what happens to Peter, and is a good reminder to us, is that it shows us that he was human, that we're human and we can't walk on water. But what is more important is this part of the passage. and it's that Jesus catches us. As Peter started to sink, he called out to Jesus, and it says in this verse 31, immediately Jesus reached out his hand and caught him. If you read it in the Message paraphrase, it says Jesus didn't hesitate. He reached down and he grabbed his hand. Jesus didn't hesitate. In that moment, Jesus didn't criticize Peter. He didn't ask him why he'd taken his eyes off him. He reaches down, he catches him, and he pulls him out. Peter stepped out despite his doubts. I'm sure they existed in the moment. And when he loses his nerve, when he takes his eyes off Jesus, Jesus doesn't hesitate to reach down and catch him. So for me, this just gives me this sense of security that we don't have to be fearful in stepping out to the things that Jesus is calling us to do, because when we are focused on him, when we cry out to him, he catches us. Now, don't get me wrong, it doesn't mean that we're reckless. Don't just go and jump off boats wherever. But if you are living in pursuit of Jesus' call, if you're walking closely with him and he prompts you to do something, trust him, because he will catch you if you begin to sink, and he pulls us out of that. He might ask us, as he did to Peter, why did you doubt? Why did you let your focus drop? He might challenge us again to lift our eyes to remind us of where we're going, but he will catch us. And as much as Jesus reaches down and catches us, sometimes when we're in amongst the waves, I think we can play a part in minimizing the waves that might take our eyes off Jesus, that might distract us. Because I think waves in life can be different, right? There's inevitable waves that come and crash over us: death, sickness, natural disasters, a car accident, losing a job. And I reckon there are enough of these type of waves in our life to distract us anyway. But I wonder sometimes what waves are within our control. What waves that we allow to hit us and distract us and cause us to sink a little. Maybe it's unsafe or unhealthy relationships. Maybe it's some kind of addiction or tendency to gossip or lie or cross over moral boundaries. And I want you to think about that today. What's your wave? What's your distraction? What are the things in your life that cause you to take your eyes off Jesus, off the goal, off the vision? Whatever we choose to magnify grows, and we can either magnify the waves or we can magnify Jesus. And this story, I think, reveals who Jesus is. It shows us so much more about Jesus and the way he responds to us when we step out to him. And you know, as much as this passage is not really about our vision or our mission in the sense of the wider Salvation Army, I think that if we as individuals are sure of where we're headed, are sure of where Jesus is calling us, it makes it easier to participate in our collective mission of saving souls, of transforming lives. God is calling each one of us. Each one of us has a purpose. And it's my prayer today that we would be sure of that, because Jesus compels and he calls and he catches us. And I hope that you feel confident that he is still doing that work in your life and in the life of the Salvation Army.